From Maine Public Radio and MainePublic.org, I'm Nora Flaherty, bringing you the news on this day in Maine, Friday, July 28, 2017. And on this day, funding that could bring health care for veterans in southern Maine much closer to home. And this week, teens and young adults from 16 countries around the world are at Colby College. They come from different cultures, but they've all lost a family member to terrorism or war. Those stories ahead in just a moment.
This Day in Maine is made possible by listeners like you and by USM's Muskie School of Public Service Master of Public Health Program, preparing students for today's complex population health and health services needs.
The House has approved emergency funding of $3.4 billion to continue the Department of Veterans Affairs Choice Program for 6 months. The program allows veterans to get health care close to home. Mal Leary has more.
The House failed to pass a similar bill earlier in the week, but after some intense committee negotiations, a compromise bill was approved by the House and is expected to win Senate passage next week. That is good news for Maine veterans, says Amadeo Loria with the American Legion's Department of Maine.
We've got to get away from one size fits all and start looking at what makes sense for veteran care, and especially here in Maine. And we advocate for whatever is going to be the best for the veteran.
Loria says a VA pilot program at Cary Medical Center in Aroostook County is a positive example, sparing vets in northern Maine the five-hour drive to the Tougas VA Center in Augusta. But the Choice Program, which allows veterans to get their health services close to home, will run out of money in August and also lose the authorization it needs to operate. GOP Congressman Bruce Poliquin, who represents the 2nd District, stressed the importance of the Choice Program in a speech supporting passage.
You might live in Fort Kent or Van Buren or Madawaska and be 5-hour drive away from Tougas. If you're not feeling well and it's February and the snow is blowing sideways, it might be really tough to get down to Tougas.
Maine has about 125,000 veterans, among the largest number per capita of any state. Many live in rural areas, but even those in southern Maine have to drive up to Tougas. 1st District Congresswoman Shelley Pingree says she supports language in the bill authorizing the lease of a new 50,000-square-foot outpatient clinic in Portland.
The new facility will be a huge step in improving the care for veterans in my district. The proposed facility will go a long way toward a more efficient, patient-centered approach to care.
Pingree says the legislation authorizes similar leases in 22 other cities across the country to provide more convenient access to health care. The measure had the unanimous support of the Veterans Affairs Committee. The bill now goes to the Senate, where it is expected to be passed and sent to the President for his approval. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Mal Leary.
Maine Senator Susan Collins says even though she did oppose the Affordable Care Act repeal proposed by Republican leaders in the Senate, she still believes the law needs to be fixed. She says recent bills have not gone far enough to address the most fundamental problem.
The Affordable Care Act, plus all of these various replacements that have been proposed, do little or nothing to address the underlying cause of high health care costs.
Collins says Congress needs to start holding hearings to develop health care legislation that can get broad bipartisan support. The senator says she believes most Mainers support her position, that she was gratified when she arrived at the Bangor International Airport today to receive a standing ovation from people waiting to board planes. It's hoped newcomers to Bangor from different cultures and countries will be able to make a smoother transition into the community as a result of last night's city council vote to establish a local multicultural center. Bangor Mayor Joseph Baldacci says the city will invest $75,000 in the center this year with the hope of delivering an array of services for new arrivals within the next 6 months.
Bangor Housing Authority is interested and involved in working with this, so it's going to have many different facets. And with having a coalition in the business community with places like General Electric and the University of Maine, then it's going to help bring all those kind of resources together.
Baldacci and Councilmember Sean Faircloth worked together to establish the Multicultural Center, which will be located on the grounds of the University of Maine at Augusta's Bangor campus. Baldacci says Bangor officials want to make sure the welcome sign is hoisted high. This week, more than 70 teens and young adults from 16 countries around the globe are at Colby College in Waterville. They come from different cultures, but they all have something in common: the loss of a family member from terrorism or war. An organization called Tuesday's Children brings together young adults affected by trauma every year to empower them to use their experience to create positive change. Patty White has more.
The week-long program is called Project Common Bond, and the bonds tend to form quickly, fostered by lots of activities, from pickup football games. To art and drama classes, to music. The 73 teen and young adults here share something unusual. They've all lost a family member to terrorism or war.
Where we live now, there's no other children who were affected by 9/11, so we were almost like outsiders.
16-year-old Caroline Tumulty Olimar of New Jersey lost her father in the Twin Towers terrorist attack on 9/11. At Project Common Bond, she doesn't feel like an outsider. Here, Caroline says, everyone understands what she's experienced, especially her roommate.
Yeah, I found out that the attack that was carried out by Al-Qaeda here, Al-Qaeda also carried out an attack that killed one of her family members. So, like, we've been kind of, like, bonding over that. And I don't know, like, it's just crazy how, like, she lives so far away, but we can all have so much in common.
This is the second time Caroline has come to Project Common Bond, along with her 19-year-old sister, Sarah.
Being 3 years old when it happened, I didn't really realize the complexity of the situation until I was a lot older. And when I did start to, like, understand, I became very, like, isolated about it and almost angry.
Coming to Project Common Bond, says Sarah, has helped her turn her trauma into something positive. Deirdre Dolan is the program manager for Tuesday's Children, who says that was the main reason this project was created.
And building resilience, promoting positive post-traumatic growth, and just really focusing on the connections that can be made and the importance of building relationships with peers that can empathize with them.
Tuesday's Children formed in the aftermath of 9/11 to support families affected by the terrorist attacks. Project Common Bond was an outgrowth of that. Every year, the project brings together young adults from around the world who lost a family member to terrorism or war. This is the first time the group has come to Maine. Over the course of a week, the days are balanced between art and sports activities and daily dignity sessions guided by therapists. Monica Meehan McNamara, the director of curriculum for Project Common Bond, says participants get the chance to share and process their experiences.
Around dignity, we talk about inclusion, acknowledgement, benefit of the doubt, accountability. These various elements, fairness, safety, etc., that if you really take them to heart, it affects the way you live and the way you interact with others.
Participants also go to peace-building sessions to learn ways to address and prevent conflict at home.
Let's talk about some of these action pieces that you can do to help prevent oppression.
By the end of the week, the teens and young adults here have a global community they can turn to for support. 18-year-old Astrid Kloven of Norway first came to Project Common Bond last year because she lost her older sister at the Utøya summer camp attack in 2011. She says sometimes she needs advice on how to confront intolerant behavior.
I can, like, complain to them and, like, ask them of what I should do, because I don't feel like attacking people when they say super, like, stuff that is not okay to say. And
for some, even just knowing they're not alone helps. 19-year-old Dawn Mulu of Nairobi, Kenya, lost her father in the U.S. Embassy bombing in 1998. She says hearing other stories shifted the way she thinks about her loss.
And be grateful that you're still alive and you can do better, even though something bad has happened to you.
As one organizer put it, the young adults in Project Common Bond are like building blocks of peace. When they leave, they carry with them what they've learned and put it to use no matter where they call home. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Patty White.
And finally tonight, for most of the 20th century, secretaries were at the heart of every office, and it was one of the few career paths that was widely open to women. The job required excellent organization, penmanship, expertise in spelling and grammar, and the ability to type at least 80 words a minute on a manual typewriter. But if you really wanted a top job, you needed to add shorthand to your resume. In the next installment of our series, Once Upon a Job, we meet a group of women who are keeping their shorthand skills alive.
Okay, let's read it back.
Dear Susan, congratulations on your recent graduation.
About a dozen women have convened at this restaurant in Winslow. They're reading from the pages of their notebooks. Written on the notebook pages are curves and loops. Each little mark is inscrutable as hieroglyphics, but the women are able to easily read back what they've just written down. They're doing a practice dictation at 60 words per minute, and everyone seems to have nailed the exercise.
All right,
let's do it again, this time at 80.
We'll do it at 80.
The Maine Shorthand Writers Association has been coming together about once a month for almost 15 years to have lunch together, practice those little squiggles known as shorthand, and swap stories about their office days.
The first man who hired me was because of my handwriting. Because when I was in high school, we had a class of penmanship and spelling, and we all had beautiful handwriting.
That's Arlene Comber, Waterville High School class of 1948. While her bosses were first impressed by her command of cursive, another subject not widely taught anymore, it was Comber's skills at shorthand that got her the big job. She worked for 30 years as a secretary at C.F. Hathaway, one of the last major shirt makers in the U.S. Knowing she wanted a career, Comber says shorthand was a major focus for her in high school. On the table in front of her are a series of little medals.
So explain what I'm looking at right here with these little medals here. Tell me.
Yes, I won them for shorthand. It had to be transcribed, and it was a congressional address, so you had to get it perfect.
Young women in high school and college would compete for these medals in timed shorthand trials, transcribing speeches and addresses at varying speeds. Comber cherishes the three she won at 100, 120, and 140 words per minute. And at the height of her powers, she could top 200 words per minute. Even today, Comber uses shorthand for lists, brief messages, and notes. But she says the number of people she knows who can actually read those notes is shrinking every year.
There is no shorthand anymore. They don't teach it.
Shorthand is basically a system of reproducing sounds onto paper and very quickly. A shorthand writer has to be able to tune into the phonetics of language. Each sound has a different name and corresponding symbol.
J. Ish, J, and J. Ish, shall, shun, shoal, che as in church, teach, reach, preach.
Kate Grindle taught shorthand for 30 years before it was removed from the Oakland High School curriculum about 20 years ago now. She got the idea to start a Maine shorthand club soon after that when a couple of students in her English class saw her scribbling notes to herself and recognized the scrawl as something their own grandmothers did.
So then I got the idea, well, we need to get these Grammys together. And I knew they were out there and that they loved shorthand. Anyone who knows shorthand loves it. Again, we write only sounds. What do we hear at the beginning of walk?
Ooh. Ooh.
Grindle says many ladies in the club remember practicing their skills by tuning into the nightly news and writing down everything anchorman Walter Cronkite said. Arlene Comber frequently went to the cinema with her notepad where she took down whole movies worth of dialogue. Grindle says a good shorthand writer can transcribe pretty much anything, including speech from another language, because it's the sounds that get written.
Probably. What's probably?
P-R-B.
P-R-B is probable, and so adding an L-Y in the end is just P-R-B-L-E.
P-I-B Lee, and Lee is just the E.
The women in the room come from a variety of backgrounds, from private business to teaching and public service. Angela Stockwell was Margaret Chase Smith's private secretary until the senator's death in 1995.
Took shorthand every day from her, dictating, taking her letters and typing them and bringing them back, and that's what I did every day.
One of the newcomers to the group is 74-year-old Linda Alderson, a civilian secretary and stenographer who spent years in Washington, D.C., taking down military communications for the Navy. She remembers one afternoon in the 1960s when she was told to report to a closed boardroom to record a special meeting verbatim.
And it turned out to be 33 Master Chief Petty Officers from all over the world, Admiral Zumwalt, and my admiral and their aides, and I sat there with my shorthand pad taking down all the testimony that was said in that room.
Alderson isn't spilling any of the secrets she was privy to, but she says she stayed up all night transcribing and typing up that report to deliver to top brass first thing in the morning.
Three, okay,
let's write those.
Shorthand, like many skills, has largely been superseded by new technology. Smartphones and tablets have replaced pens and typewriters and will even correct your spelling. The Maine Shorthand Writers Association now has about 100 members on its mailing list, with many members in their 70s, 80s, and 90s. Not all can make it to the monthly gatherings, but the women make sure to stay in touch. Not with a badly spelled text message, but through cards, letters, and notes in the mail. Written, of course, in shorthand.
Report, as in sort, report.
For Maine Public Radio News, I'm JNFERMJEL.
For more of today's Maine news, visit our website, mainepublic.org. And from Maine Public, that's This Day in Maine, July 28th, 2017. Thanks to Ed Morin and our digital team, I'm Nora Flaherty.